Good morning, Right Talk Radio listeners, and welcome to Capitol Hill Insights. My name is Elizabeth Letchworth. I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes, and happy belated Father's Day to all those fathers out there. I hope you had a wonderful day. I hope you enjoyed fatherhood on your special day. It was a beautiful day here in Central Florida. A little bit of rain in the middle of the day, which is sort of typical of our summer months, but otherwise a beautiful, beautiful day. Happy Father's Day. Thanks for joining Capitol Hill Insights. As most of you know, Capitol Hill Insights is a radio program designed to outline the comings and goings of members of Congress and the House and the Senate, your Congress in Washington, D.C. We air the show twice weekly, this time every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Typically on the Monday show, we talk about what your Congress is doing for the week. What's the Senate doing? What's the House doing? What are they up to? And then typically Friday, the second show of the week at 11 a.m., we recap the week. We talk about what Congress did actually do as opposed to what they said they were going to do. And did they do it well? Did they represent you well? Did they do what they said they were going to do? And you might want to grade them in your mind. You might want to decide whether they got a failing grade for the week or a passing grade for the week. And speaking of grades, Capitol Hill Insights is always brought to you by GradeGov.com. GradeGov.com is a free and simple website, easy to join and always will remain free. It's the website that lets you grade any member of Congress. It can be your member of Congress, or it can be some guy or gal you saw on the news. And simply join, find that person, begin to type the member of Congress's name in the find box on the home page, and up will pop his or her page on GradeGov, and hover over an A, B, C, D, or F. Those are the just like the grades we all got in school. Take your cursor and hover over one of those, and it's going to change color. And then the site will prompt you to follow up with a letter, and it auto-generates a certain portion of the letter up to, "Dear Senator or Congressman so-and-so, I gave you, let's just say, a C today. And you have to finish it because you were good, because you were bad, because I want you to do this or I don't want to." Whatever you want to say, remember, be respectful. You can't expect them to respect your views if you're not respectful. And then click the send button, and guess what? You've just graded and written a letter to a member of Congress. GradeGov does limit you to one grade and letter per day. We wouldn't want you stuffing the ballot box. Imagine, think about it, if, I don't know, an organization with an agenda spent its entire lunch hour going through GradeGov grading all F's or all A's. Congress needs to know that this website is your voice. It needs to take it seriously and know that it represents constituents and the public, not a bunch of organizations with agendas. So we have limited it to one grade per day, but you can go on as many times as you want, look around, check out other people's, other members of Congress, find out the upcoming votes, the votes they've cast, the big ones like healthcare, TARP, stimulus. Check out if they would get reelected if the election were held today. That's also on each member of Congress's page. And remember, GradeGov does get through when other websites that say you're going to be writing members of Congress. GradeGov gets through because it doesn't use that auto computer generated system that the Senate and the House set up. It sends the grades and the letters straight to individual staffers that work for all of the 100 senators and all of the 435 members of the House. So your grades and letters go to actual staffers that work on Capitol Hill. Doesn't go into some never-never land computer system. So let your voice be heard. Join GradeGov and enjoy the site. We're going to talk about what the Senate is going to do this week, but in order to do that, we're going to have to talk about what they didn't do last week. Last week, they spent a second week trying to deal with the Tax Extenders Bill. This is the bill that couples almost 50 already expired tax provisions, couples them all together, trying to get it passed. It also adds to that the extension of unemployment benefits. Those benefits have expired as of June 1, and it has with it what's called the doctor fix. That's postponing the cut in doctors' repayments when they get reimbursed from the federal government from seeing Medicare patients. That bill is sitting in the Senate, and it is languished there actually for the last 2 weeks. 2 weeks is a lot of time in Senate debate time. That's about how long they spent on health care. So this is a long time, and it started out, this extenders bill started out last December when the House passed it. It had a price tag of $55 billion. Now, you know as well as I do, I hate to say this, but this bill is not paid for. Once again, goes right on to the deficit. Now, the price tag is close to $140 billion, and still most of it is not paid for. So the Senate spent the last 2 weeks trying to get this thing passed, and they can't get it passed. The Republicans say they're filibustering it. The Republicans want the bill paid for. They keep offering amendments to try to get it paid for using things like unspent stimulus money and unauthorized TARP money. But technically, those amendments keep getting defeated, so technically the bill is not paid for. And they can't get it passed because they can't get a Republican or two to join them to reach that 60 threshold. So what the Senate did last Friday, right before they went out, they passed a small bill. They carved out a piece of the extenders bill. The doctor fix has a price tag of $6.5 billion. They paid for this provision by doing some pension reform maneuvers. And they passed that, and that is sitting in the House chamber. They were getting tons and tons of pressure from various medical associations, doctors' associations. The doctor's reimbursement payment went into effect June 1. It's a 21% cut. Now, to fix this problem, Congress originally put this fix in the health care bill. But it had too large of a price tag, so they stripped it out. That's to make sure that health care passed with the lowest price tag possible. So now they're having to deal with it separately. And it's become a real mess. Doctors are losing faith every single day that they're going to be reimbursed when they see Medicare patients. And in fact, as of June 1, they've been cut 21%. So in other words, if it costs them a dollar to see a Medicare patient, when they send their bill in to the federal government to be reimbursed, the federal government sends them 79 cents. How long would you stay in business if that's the way it worked for you? And actually, the American Medical Association, the president, Cecil Wilson, said last week when the Senate was struggling to pass the big extenders bill that had the doctor fix in it, I'm quoting now, "Congress is playing Russian roulette with senior citizens' health care. This is no way to run a major health coverage program. Already the instability caused by repeated short-term delays is taking its toll." Well, Mr. Wilson of the AMA, I think you're right. I think Congress heard your plea. I think that's why the Senate decided they can't get the big extenders bill out of the Senate, because they've porked it up too much. So we better strip out the doctor fix and at least pass it. So that's what they did last Friday. And that doctor fix is sitting in the House chamber when they come back tomorrow. They convene on Tuesday. Let me read you one other news article. It's an AP article, the mainstream media, written in Houston, about doctors in Houston dropping out of the Medicare program for senior citizens because of the physician reimbursement. This is in the Houston area. It says more than 300 Texas doctors have dropped out of the program, including 50 in the first 3 months of 2010. The Texas Medical Association did a survey and found that 42% of Texas doctors say they're no longer accepting new Medicare patients. This is bad news, ladies and gentlemen, as you know it. I'm not making any, you know, overreaching statement. This is bad news. It's bad news for our seniors that have paid into the system for so long and been promised the system, and now they're going to struggle to find a doctor to see him. Obviously, Congress is figuring out their inability to pass this provision is causing problems too, which is why they stripped it out last week, and it now faces House consideration. I'm going to take a quick break, and we'll talk about what the Senate and the House are going to do this week, and talk about whether the House is going to be able to do the doc fix that's sitting on their doorstep. So let me take a quick break. I'll talk to you in just a minute. Thanks again, and stay tuned.
You talk too much, you worry me to death. You talk too much, you even worry my pet. You just talk too much. You talk about people that you
Hi, and welcome back to Capitol Hill Insights. We're talking about what the Congress is doing this week. Before we can do that, though, we need to sort of recap what they did last week, because those bills are sitting in the respective chambers. What the Senate did last Friday is sitting in the House chamber. And what the House did last week is sitting in the Senate chamber. The House, while it was waiting for the Senate to send them the extenders bill, they called up a small business lending and reinvestment bill. The small business lending and reinvestment bill has a price tag of about $30 billion. That $30 billion goes to pay for a program that encourages lending for small businesses, but it also allows small business startup costs ranging anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000 to potentially be fully deductible. You have to apply for these programs through the SBA, but they are new programs, obviously designed to try to spur new small business hiring. The House got the message from you and I, from GradeGov, from all of us screaming at the top of our lungs to stop spending, because when they called up this bill and it didn't have a offset or a pay for, members of Congress said, I'm not voting for it. I'm tired of you putting my neck on the chopping block. Find a pay for it. If it's such a great idea, find a way to pay for it. Well, the speaker did. Are you ready for this? Are you guys sitting down? The $30 billion Small Business Lending Act is paid for. How they pay for it is they ask multi-billion dollar corporations to project what they would pay in their third quarter estimated taxes in 2015. Yep. Go in your crystal ball. Figure out what you might pay in your estimated third quarter taxes of 2015, and multi-billion dollar corporations, pay that amount now. That's how they create this pot of $30 billion, and that's how they pay for this small business lending bill. So, the small business lending bill is sitting in the Senate chamber now waiting for them to consider it. There's a chance that the majority leader will call it up this week. He also will possibly still struggle with this extenders bill, the $140 billion extenders bill, probably slimming it down a bit. Well, we know it'll be slimmed down some because they cut out of it the doctor fix and sent that on its way to the House side as a separate bill. So it's at least going to be $6.5 billion less. The Senate is expected to take that up. But they also want to consider an FDA reauthorization bill. It's called the Food Safety Bill, and it's designed to give the FDA more authority. There's some in the Democratic leadership in the Senate that are suggesting to Senator Reid, we need a break from the extenders bill. We're at loggerheads. We're upset with each other. Let's cool it. Let's pause the extenders bill. Let's maybe do the food safety bill, or maybe this small business lending bill. That's going to be the suggestion from many on the Democratic side of the Senate. But what might be worth thinking about and talking about maybe amongst your friends is, would you do that if you were a member of the Senate? Because you've got to remember, one of the extenders in this extender package of those 50 plus tax programs is the federal unemployment benefits. Now, I personally don't believe you're doing anybody a real favor by allowing them to stay on unemployment for 2 years. But I don't make the call. But this provision included in the extenders bill extends those benefits all the way to December 1. The unfortunate thing about this is, whether you believe or not whether the unemployed should continue to get benefits now 2 years into the program, you got to let them know that they're going to stop getting the benefits. And their benefits stopped June 1, and nobody told them in advance. They just screeched to a halt. So my suggestion would be, do a short-term unemployment benefits, maybe another 60 days, and then say that's it. Then cut it off. At least give them notice. Or at least scale back. Insist that the unemployed start looking for jobs, prove they're looking for jobs, and scale back the benefits each week they're on it. Some version of that. But again, I don't think it's fair to the unemployed to just out of the blue stop their benefits when they had no indication they were going to stop. And because the unemployed benefits expired June 1, seems to me that they really do need to do some version of the extenders bill, hopefully a slimmed down version of this $140 billion behemoth before the 4th of July recess, which is in 2 weeks. The House, on the other hand, has, as we talked about, the doctor fix sitting on their doorstep. And boy, I tell you what, if you read the newspapers, I know in our local Central Florida newspapers, two or three articles about doctors dropping Medicare patients. Of course, Florida has a lot of seniors, as you all know. But I bet you if you looked in your local papers, you're starting to see articles about doctors not wanting to take new Medicare patients. That's a serious problem, ladies and gentlemen. So I would hope the House of Representatives would take up the extension of the reimbursement payments so that the doctors at least won't be cut between now and December 1. And maybe, I'm not holding my breath, but maybe they can come up with a way to resolve the doctor cut between now and December. It at least buys them a little more time. In my opinion, they should have put the permanent fix in the health care bill. And they should have been honest with the American people that it's in there. It's got a huge price tag. And if you really want this program to go through, then it needs to stay in. Of course, I don't believe that the health care bill was the right thing to do. And I believe if they would have left it in, it wouldn't have passed, which in my view would have been a good thing that it not become law. But they saw the writing on the wall also, and that's why they stripped it out. I guess that's one of those no guts, no glory. They kind of wimped out on the doctors. The doctors feel like they've been wimped out on. And therefore, many of them are saying, I'm tired of fooling with it. I'm tired of being in the program. I'm tired of wondering if I'm going to get my dollar back for the dollar spent for me to see Medicare patients. So I'm done. I'm out of the program. And that is not fair to the seniors of this country. I'm going to take another quick break, and we're going to talk about another bill that the House needs to take up, the war supplemental. We've talked about it before. We'll wrap up with that after this quick break. Hold on.
Thank you.
Hi, and welcome back to Capitol Hill Insights. We're talking about what Congress is going to do this week, both the House and the Senate chambers. We're talking about the House chamber right now. They have the doctor fix in their chambers, the Senate having passed it last Friday. It's paid for. It's got a price tag of $6.5 billion, and it extends, or postpones, I guess I should say, the Medicare cuts that the doctors were going to receive. It postpones those cuts until December 1. Gives Congress a chance to figure out how to hopefully fix that program permanently. Also, what the House has in front of it that it needs to do, Secretary Gates, our defense secretary, has pleaded for Congress to do, and that is the War Supplemental Appropriations Bill. Gosh, they've had it in front of them for 3 weeks. This is that bill that funds the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, and it replenishes FEMA. FEMA is basically almost broke. If one of our states were to have an emergency, I'm betting FEMA couldn't respond like it really should. We really need to replenish FEMA, and we need to fund our wars. But in my view, we need to pay for it too. And of course, this bill is also not paid for. Now, I can tell you that the Bush administration began doing these emergency designations of these bills when we went to war in Iraq, and he didn't want to pay for the wars in Iraq. So he deemed each emergency war supplemental, as they're called, an emergency. Congress got in the habit of deeming them an emergency, and they also got in the habit of porking them up. Well, they haven't lost that habit, at least not yet. When the president requested this bill in March, Secretary Gates went to the president and said, I'm getting low on funds. In order for us to do the job well, we need more funds. And the president put the request to Congress, deemed it an emergency, so it doesn't have to be paid for. But the price tag at that point was $33 billion. Well, the porkers took over, those being the senators, and they bumped the price tag from $33 billion to $60 billion. Now the bill sits in the House chamber. They want to pork it up to $84 billion. All of it not paid for. Not a penny. Not one red cent. Secretary Gates last week, the middle of last week, when he was in front of the Senate Appropriations Committee, said, and I'm going to quote, I am becoming increasingly concerned about the lack of progress on the supplemental and strongly urge Congress to complete its work as quickly as possible. What more does the man have to say? We are in effect, two wars. And he needs his money. The man needs his money. My hope would be, though, that Congress would get some nerve, get some backbone, and start paying for all these war supplementals. I hated it when George Bush did it. I hate it when this president is doing it. It's lazy. It is lazy on the part of members of Congress not to have to dig around and find the money. It's no different than you and I not figuring out how to budget some big ticket item that our household needs, and throwing it on a credit card and not having a clue how to pay for it. Not a clue. That's lazy and that's irresponsible, and that's what our Congress is doing. And they're doing it with funds that fund the war. That to me is sad. But that is what it is in today's Congress. And that's something that we can probably spend a whole show on talking about. How they've gotten lazy. How they've shirked their responsibilities. But let me remind you of something that we have been talking about, and that's that lame duck session. And when I say we've been talking about it, I hope that but you have been sort of connecting the dots. I've been trying to help you connect the dots as to why I believe the Speaker and the Majority Leader will call this lame duck. They'll call it in after the elections in November. And, you know, most people, when they go to the polls in November to reelect or to throw out their member of Congress, they think that once they vote on November 2nd that their guy or gal is gone. Well, nope, that's not true. They hold the position. They keep the job until January. So it doesn't matter if you voted them out or not. It doesn't matter if Speaker Pelosi is no longer the Speaker. It doesn't matter if Harry Reid is no longer the Majority Leader. Shoot, Harry Reid may not even be a Senator come January. They are still who they are after the elections. And as I, when I talk about connecting the dots, friends, I want you to remember when I tell you that different programs are being extended. Remember we just talked about the doctor fix? Fixing their reimbursement payments so that they don't get cut? How long did that fix stay into effect? Yep, if you'd said December 1 or the end of November, you're right. They're going to fix the cut, make sure the cut doesn't go into effect until December 1. Then they need to do something else, or it will go into effect. The unemployment benefits, the extension of the unemployment benefits, that's in this big extenders bill. You want to guess? You want to take a wild guess how long they are extended till? Whoever guessed December 1 gets a hand of applause. Yay! Yep, they're extending that till December 1. What else do we remember happens December 1? Yep, that blue ribbon panel commission on the deficit. That reports to Congress on December 1. So, gee, ladies and gentlemen, it wouldn't be hard for you or I to come up with a logical argument. I don't even have to be a member of Congress to come up with the argument that any member of Congress would make to their constituents. We have to be back in session because the Blue Ribbon Panel reports to us, because unemployment benefits expire, because the doctor cut is going to go into effect. And I can tell you they will extend more and more and more programs down to that date, making sure that a lot of things expire so that the Speaker and the Majority Leader have a reason to call a lame duck session. And when they call the lame duck session, maybe the second week in November, they could spend all the way up to Thanksgiving, and then after Thanksgiving, all the way up to Christmas, doing whatever they want to do to whoever they want to do it to. And we have no ramifications because we've already voted. Maybe we voted them out, but they're not out yet. So they can do lots of harm. This lame duck can be our worst nightmare. We thought healthcare was bad. Maybe you didn't think healthcare was bad. Whatever your thoughts on that, calling a lame duck session and loading up the House and the Senate with an agenda after agenda after agenda, from immigration to cap and trade to gosh know what, knows what, when the voters won't have a say at all, to me it's just not the right thing to do. So keep thinking about and keep listening for other programs being extended to that magic date. And then you can kind of chuckle under your breath. Well, geez, I know why they're doing that. They're setting up a perfect storm, the perfect scenario. You can even tell your friends you've got a little inside information. And you learned it from Capitol Hill Insights. I'm going to let you go with that. I hope to hear from you on Friday when we return at 11 a.m. In the meantime, everybody have a wonderful, safe, and blessed week. And stay tuned.